Our next speaker about Pro 6 advertisers, Karl Mazak, if I pronounce it correctly. We'll go. Yes. Cool. Here he is. Enjoy.
Thank you. So, shall we begin? I'm going to leave a few seconds for people to settle down. Oh, and the sound. Yes, now it works. Excellent. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm too tall. Right, so let's begin. Hello, I'm Masak. I've been involved with Perl 6 for a few years, and increasingly involved, I should say. This talk is sort of a talk that wants to be something, and it's the second time I'm giving it, and it's a little bit of that something, a little bit more of that something than it was last time. So it sort of falls within a little triangle between three topics, and that is introducing nice Perl syntax to you, because some people here might not have used Perl 6 at all, and some people have used it once but forgotten and things like that. And then talking about Perl 6 best practices, because it's not too early to discuss Perl 6 best practices. They're already emerging. And zebras. So let's talk about loops. Loops are, oh, by the way, I should say, there's this talk is called Perl 6 Appetizers. There's images of food in it. The first time I gave it, I added as a comment in my application for the talk, please put this talk before lunch so that people will salivate. And they did put it before lunch, and then the schedule was reorganized, so I ended up in the afternoon. Ah. And for this time, I actually forgot to put in the note, so I ended up in the afternoon. But at some point, I'm going to have people salivating just before lunch. Right. Loops are sort of very common. You're meant to sort of have your computer do repetitive tasks for you, so we tend to use loops a lot. And you're used to while and for and until. But there are a few new ones in Perl 6. And let's look at those. If you're to write a C-style for loop, a C-style loop in Perl 5, you're using for or for each. But in Perl 6, there's a new keyword loop. And that's it. Whenever you feel tempted to use a C-style for loop, you use loop instead. I'm almost never tempted to do that nowadays, but there is this option. It also has the role of doing the forever loop. So instead of doing while one or something, you can just do loop and then sort of empty brackets with semicolons. And you don't even need those, actually. You can just do loop if you want. So this program just goes on and on and on. Then there's repeat while, and it's the new version of do while that was in Perl 5. We're using do for something more or less completely different. So we have repeat while instead. And this code ensures that we have at least one Stroopwafel before we're checking whether we're hungry or not. I'd like to ask the audience something. How many people have ever used a do while loop? Ever. Yeah. So, yeah, that's about half or something. But you agree it's not very common. For some reason, I find myself almost never writing these. But when you want to do it, there's a way, and it's repeat while. And maybe you're aware that there are some strange issues with do while, such as not being able to use next and last within them. And that is completely gone now, because repeat while is sort of a real construct and not just the gluing together of two different constructs, one of which is not a loop. And there's a bit of a twist. If you have a longer loop than this, you might want to pull up the condition and put it up here. And the code still does the same thing. Keep that in mind. It's not an ordinary while loop. It's a repeat while loop, which means that the condition is checked only after the first run.
Can you also still repeat?
Yes, that works the same. And we have this syntax. Note the arrow and $n there. This collects a value from the condition. So repeat while trapped zebras. And the plus here says numify. It's not like in Perl 5 where the plus does basically nothing. Here it turns it into a number. So if trapped zebras returns a list of zebras, the numification turns it to the amount of trapped zebras. So in summary, this code always frees at least some zebras. Then it checked whether there are still trapped zebras left. And as a bonus, it turns the number of trapped zebras into the variable $n. So this is an example of a pointer block. You have a block which is not only a block, but it's a block with a parameter. The thing is that this block will run a first time without the condition having been run, at which point the $n will be undefined. So that's why we do the if the defined check there. So there's still some number of zebras in captivity will only be printed the second time.
So this is a really bad example of repeat while.
Yeah. Yes.
This could just be while.
Well, no. The difference between this and a while loop is that this runs at least once. The free sum zebras will run at least one time. If we start without... Well, I don't know what would happen if we would try to free some zebras and there were none left. But that is what would happen. Yeah, it's a slightly contrived example. I have not been working in the freeing zebras industry. There was some miscellaneous loops. Let's talk about for loops, because those are really the common ones. First off, no parentheses. And that goes for all looping constructs. I haven't been mentioning it, but that goes for the while loops and until loops and if statements and unless. Just fewer parentheses. And as you saw, we moved the iteration variable closer to the block, because it really belongs to the block. As I mentioned, a pointer block is a block with a parameter. And now that's basically all this is. We do a for loop, and the block can optionally take a parameter, and that parameter gets intuited into being the iteration variable. So this works really well. It's not just, we didn't just move it for the sake of moving it, but it really belongs with the block. And you'll see it coming back again and again, sort of as a pointer block. Here's one extra sort of fallout from that. Because a block can take two parameters, we can just stick an extra variable there, and it will iterate two values at a time. I think that's nice.
Is it always locked at two, or can you do more?
No, you can do any number of variables. Just stick extra ones on there. There's an issue of not ending up even, sort of. If you have 100 values and you loop three at a time, you will not end up even, and there will be oddness at the end. It used to throw an error at that. I think now it just ignores the last values. What you can do is put in optional parameters, and that will solve the whole thing. Then it will make the extra last sort of collecting up iteration.
Can you also do arrow at sign I, so you get the whole thing in an array?
Yes, with a small exception. If you just do arrow at sign, it will expect an array. It will not slurp like in Perl 5. You have to use a special character, the asterisk, to slurp things. But yes, that is possible. Though why you would want to do a for loop in that way, I don't know. It's possible. The thing is that this pointy block is as general as a signature. So you can do any signature binding you want there. You can even get fancy and unpack things. If you have a data structure, you can sort of put your parameters there and do a bit of unpacking work before the block even begins. Yeah? This one will loop 5 times. That is correct. Yes, you had a question.
I've noticed in Pro 6 here, there's not a lot of MI going on, a lot of scoping. So I and J in this are automatically scoped for this block?
Exactly. They are parameters to the block. So it's like...
As if I had said MI.
Yes, it's as if you had said MI. You sort of get the extra binding here to the things in the list. That's why it looks like that. It sometimes happens that you want to loop over 2 lists at the same time, sort of not one after the other, but values interleaved. So here we have list A to J and 1 to 10, and we want to go A1, B2, C3, and so on. Then we can use a simple operator called capital Z for the zip operator. It takes 2 lists and zips them up one value, then the other value, and so on. And note that var here contains first a letter and then a number and then a letter again. And quite naturally, if we want to loop with 2 variables here, a letter and a number, we can do that. Of course, the z variable is not limited to for loops. The z operator is not limited to for loops. We can use it outside as well. It comes in handy when we want to assign things to hashes, for example. This does what you think it does.
Do we?
Yeah. Then we have things like arithmetic sequences. This happens sometimes. You're only interested in every other value. You want to do 0, 2, 4, 6, 8. I've written it like I would write it in Perl 5. So this is, apart from the parentheses for the for loop, this is both valid Perl 5 and Perl 6. In Perl 6, I would write it like this. And note the 3 dots. We took the flip-flop operator and made it actually useful for something. And what it does, it expects a sequence, and it intuits what the sequence means. So here it sees, 0, 2, okay, then the next value will be 4. This is an arithmetic sequence, and I'm supposed to stop at 100. And in the case where we don't know, we want to dynamically stop at some value, we just put in a block there. So this one checks the condition, is the value larger than max? And if it is, we stop at that value and we exclude that value. You see the little hat on the 3 dots there? That means don't take the last value. We think this is a bit noisy. So we have a special syntax for these kind of small blocks where dollar underscores play some role. We don't want to write dollar underscore and we don't want to write the block curlies. So we just write this star larger than max. But it means exactly the same thing. It's a closure block with one parameter. Here's the other kind of sequence you can do with the sequence operator. This is a geometric sequence. You give it the values 1, 2, 4, and it says, this is something that gets multiplied by 2 every time, so the next number is 8, and so on. Yes, we have inf as a value in Perl 6. So you should probably be careful with when you stop in this for loop. You would have a last somewhere or something.
Is this very confusing to you?
Yes.
Okay, that's clear.
It's
all right. Isn't
this very confusing to read? Not after a while. That sounds like a joke, but this is syntax that really grows on you. So my best advice to you is give it some time. And there are heavy blogging and Twittering debates over this, and people are really divided and saying this is why Perl 6 will remain an academic language forever and things like that. But I find it to be a syntax that has its roots in maths and that really summarizes some things that you want to write. You have to be careful with it, of course, because it easily goes overboard if you cram too much in it, which is why we have these abbreviations. Yes?
So how do we know that the next value is 9 instead of 7?
The next value is 8 because this is a geometric sequence.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but how do you know it's not 7?
Because it's 1, 2, 4 and not minus 1, 2, 4. Sorry, no. What would it be? How do you arrive at 7? Sorry.
Difference between the first is 1, the difference between the second is 2, difference between the third is 3.
Okay, so. That's just how the intuiting is going on. There are two kind of default sequences, and that's the arithmetic and the geometric ones, sort of the normal ones.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Fibonacci sequences and all kinds of other things.
I'm getting to Fibonacci.
Oh, why are we stopping before infinity? What's infinity minus one?
Oh, sorry, that's the typo. Okay. I meant to go all the way to infinity. Yes? Yes? Yeah. Divide by zero errors. We do have them still, but they're sort of soft. And right. Oh, you're right. Yeah, Tadik is right. And I'm sort of bothered by that, but apparently that's IEEE standard. So I should add just for my conscience that inf here is sort of a kind of cheating, because what the sequence operator does is it matches against the right-hand side to see if it got that value. So instead of inf here, I could write the string cucumber or whatever. It's just that inf reads very well, and that's why I chose it. Okay, ready? No, it's an actual value, and it types as num. So it's an actual numeric value. It's just that since it will never match...
The number would have had the same effect.
Exactly, yeah. That's what I'm getting at.
So what's the number of the cucumber?
Here's the Fibonacci sequence. We're going to shorten it a bit, but this is the general principle. You prime it with the values 0 and 1, then you put in a block telling you how to arrive at the next value, and then you go, well, almost all the way to infinity. So you see here, block with A and B, just add together A and B. Nothing fancy. This is another pointy block. There's an abbreviation for the pointy blocks. When you're too lazy to declare your parameters to the pointy block, you just put small pointy things on the variables themselves. Kind of neat. But once we've gotten this far, sorry, yeah. Once we've gotten this far, we can do the thing with the star and just do star plus star, and that means the same thing.
I'll totally forget that.
Yeah. So it's...
You could call this line noise,
but at least it's mathematical line noise. So it's 0, 1, and then something plus something, and all the way to infinity. Yeah. One final thing. This is another meta operator. If you do a lot of nested for loops, there's a way to abbreviate that and just do one for loop. You remember the capital Z for zipping together lists. This other operation does the Cartesian product of lists. So it's like having two for loops, but without the extra indentation. Sorry, what was the question?
Is it exactly equivalent to previous, or is it just the set of
and the order is going to be fine.
Semantically, it's the same. It will iterate through the values in the same order and things like that. Okay. The spec says that the Ys will iterate faster than the Xs, and that amounts to the same thing. And you can use it several times. So instead of having, I don't know, 10 nested for loops, you can have this. With the meta operators, it's sort of do not look directly into them. I find that introducing them through examples like this is the way to sell them, not just putting up a table of them and scaring people to death. Okay, moving on. We have class declarations in Perl 6. They look like this. And it's kind of reminiscent of Moose, and with reason. The thing is, if you're doing your declaration in a file and all you're talking about in that file is basically the class Zebra, why not do it like this? Sort of reminds of the old Perl 5 syntax. And it's quite nice because it frees up a layer of indentation and it frees up a mental layer of indentation as well. You don't have to worry about the closing brace at the end of the file. Here's one sort of trick that I found while debugging complicated Perl 6 code. Ever been in this situation? You have a foo method that is misbehaving, and you do something inside of it, and at the end you return a result. But since the result is not at all what you expected, you want to print it out before returning it. And probably you don't want to print it to the standard output, so you warn instead. But in Perl 6, warn actually throws an exception which might get caught in a catch block, so we note instead. That's like warn, but it doesn't throw the exception. But this is a complicated method, so it actually looks more like this. We have several return points, and we have to put the note in several places, and it gets tedious and hard and error-prone. And, yeah, with... Sorry?
Shouldn't this have been a multi?
No, not necessarily. It depends on the logic. You could argue that it should have been a multi-method. Depends exactly how the flow is through. There are valid reasons, I would say, for having various return points. Anyway, it gets sort of not... feasible to do several notes like this and maintaining that as the code changes. So we do this instead. We create a role which has a similar method foo. All it does is collect the result from the original foo. This call same will have the effect of calling the old method. Then we note the result just as we wanted and we return it. So now we have only one note. And all we have to do is take the object that we want to debug and applying the role to it. Does is the sort of apply role operator. Very convenient. And according to me, not very immediate. So I'd like to recommend this trick to people who might want to debug Perl 6 code. And it sort of, that's one of the big great fallouts of object orientation and using objects and classes. You're able to do this. Yes, question.
How would you use call same in different contexts? List context, item context. Would you need an if else? Or
the question is, how does call same behave in different contexts, like list context and item context? While you blinked, Perl 6 lost that concept of contexts.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I see.
That's the short answer. It turns out that context propagating outwards from the callee is not combinable with really good multi-dispatch. So we had to lose one or the other, and the choice wasn't really that hard.
Doesn't also work with threading. It's the same problem there.
Uh-huh, right. What we do instead of those nice contexts is we have objects providing different views, so to speak. You can sort of numify them or listify them, and they will behave differently. But it will be just one object and just one return value. So a net win, I think. Yes?
Do you also have modifiers like before and after?
Like no. What we have instead is this mechanism, and you put the call same in different places. People are constantly requesting before and after, so I guess there's a general liking for them. I'm betting someone will write a syntax extension for it, but it's not strictly necessary. Okay, side effect free code and more food. So I had this subroutine that turned a path to a module name. Here you see the new syntax for substitution. It's kind of like Perl 5's, but it uses assignment instead. So we substitute away lib at the beginning and PM or PM6 at the end, and we turn all the slashes to double colons. Return the path. This is all good and well until we sort of want both the old value and the new value along. And this actually modifies the value, and that's not good. Right, so we start changing around the code. This is just a refactoring, and it means the same thing. We do substitutions with the method call instead. Oh, for those unused to method calls in Perl 6, the dot actually means method call, not concatenate. And yeah, you see the isRW there. That's the real problem with this sub, because whenever we pass in something that is a constant, for example, a literal string, it will blow up because it will try to modify the literal string. So again, the problem with this sub is that it tries to modify things. So our first fix is using isCopy, and it makes its own string that it can modify all it wants. And that kind of works. But we could make this method even nicer by just modifying, deriving from the original path. The subst method makes a copy and returns sort of the new result, and it leaves this $path variable alone, which is nice. And whenever you want to actually mutate the value in the original string, you can do like this with dot equals. So Perl 6 is designed to generally not mutate things for you, and when you want them, you do dot equals. So you don't need all these methods with exclamation marks like in Ruby. Code without assignment is more module, because when you have without assignments, at least you have the choice to do with or without assignments quite easily. And the programmer gets happier because of the modularity, and the compiler gets happier because suddenly it can inline things and do funny stuff because things don't change around. Functions. I bet most of you have seen this. A sorting routine gets more flexible if you pass in a comparator, which then tells you how to compare different elements, so you don't have to do one sort for alphabetic and one sort for numeric and so on. This is how sort works in Perl already, except in the reverse order, I notice. So that's just simply nice, having that power to pass in first class functions. But it goes beyond that. You can have local variables in your scope, which are these pointer blocks again. Here you see the pointer blocks take one parameter, which is a list of two values, x and y, and they do something with them and return a new list. This is code from a game I wrote, which does manipulations on a board of some kind. So it keeps track of the coordinates, which is nice because you're basically inventing your own verbs in this routine, whatever it is. So you can go above, right of, and then the position. So it's inventing a local vocabulary, basically. Okay, so we're back to this situation where we have a bunch of if, else, if, and we're comparing against a variable's type. This code style is basically advised against. It's the switch statement over types. You want to do it in some nicer way than that. So in Perl 6, you have the option to make multi-methods, and the if statements sort of just go away and get baked into the signatures. And that's to be recommended. Saves a level of an indentation. And also, it sort of abstracts away a lot of decision-making. It pushes it down into the multis. Oh, and I should mention, do make use of literals inside your signatures. This is an addition to Perl 6 from a couple of years ago, when you can just go fib 0 and fib 1, and then the general case is int. So it catches the cases 0 and 1 here. And this is actually just sugar for a slightly longer some variable where the variable matches 0 and some variable where the variable matches 1. So, yes, question.
Does the order of those definitions matter?
The order of the definitions does not matter as long as they're in the same block. Thank you for that.
I can't quite see from here. Do you have the int type on the... Where you've got, is that just $where and then 1 and 0?
Yep.
What it actually does is infers the type of the 1 and the 0. If it didn't do that, the nominal type would be...
Oh, indeed, looser. Yes. That's an important part of it. It's right as it stands, but you notice here that it just says 0 and 1. So what the desugaring thing does is it actually puts an int on those variables and types them as ints. Before it does the check against 0 and 1. And that's important because the third variant there is typed as int. So the matching goes according to narrowness, and if the above two weren't ints, it wouldn't work. Right, so using multi-methods to your advantage, let's say we have three types of zebras in our program. There are actually three types of zebras. The plains one is the regular one, and the gravies one is sort of the posh fancy one. Wikipedia said that it looks like a zebra version of an ass, and I have no comment on that. And the mountain zebra is sort of the goaty version. It can go 3 days without drinking water. So this sort of layout, if you're checking the zebra type against many different subtypes, we can do better than that. First off, we can drop all the repetitions of the zebra variables and put things into a given. So we're just smart matching on them with when. How many people have used given and when in Perl 5? Yay, a smattering. But we can do even better than that, because If we really look at how this code behaves, it's expecting a zebra of some kind, and it gets disappointed if it doesn't find one. So we'll just put zebra in the signature, like this. And then the default at the bottom can go away, because it will never happen. We've basically pushed the zebra condition into the signature, and you'll notice how much less code that is. It's quite nice. Yes. Yes, but not in our program, because there are only three types of zebras. Yeah, that is correct. Someone could subclass a zebra with genetic engineering or something. So in that case, I would add back the default, just not to be surprised by unknown zebras. Small scopes. I think this is the last point. I'm a fan of small scopes in various shapes and sizes, because I think that variables are, on some level, a necessary evil, and the less scope they have, the better. In Perl 6, subroutines are naturally MyScoped, so they don't clutter up your whole program, but just the scope they're in. And we're using this quite a bit. You'll notice this is a method build, but it has a sub inside of it, path to module name, which you saw before, and there's a call to that subroutine, which means that outside of that method, that subroutine isn't even visible. And if it's not used, that's probably a good thing, because we have sort of an upper limit on the damage that this method could cause. It goes for classes as well, but classes are by default our scope, so we have to put a my class on this alien class, and then it can attack the Earth inside this invade sub. So lexically scoped classes, that's quite nice. If I'm to make a prediction, I think that lexically scoped types will be quite popular in a few years or so. I have slight Ruby envy for an idiom which looks like this. Open zebra txt, and then there's a block, and we do things. And at the end of the block, the file handle sort of gets discarded. The thing is that even though I have envy for it, I think it's a bit strange that we pollute the open function with a version that takes a block like this. That feels non-orthogonal to me. But this construct is basically the Ruby version of a pointer block. So we can just do a pointer block in Perl 6. And if we use given, that's sort of our penalty for not wanting to pollute the open function with extra semantics like block. So it's kind of the same. I have to remember to close the file handler still, and that's kind of sad. Someone will do something nice with macros when we have macros to avoid that. But it's a big improvement, I think, and it sort of keeps things inside of block. Oh, and don't forget the main course. We have a main sub, which we can put a signature on, and it will function like argument parsing. So just run through this. You see here we're using the command line, and things just get parsed into command line arguments for us. That's very nice. We get it for free, no module required. And we get the usage line for free, so if we do something wrong, we get the correct usage of the program. Don't have to write anything. And this idiom is sort of emerging. If you do one regular main and one... Oh, these should be multi-subs. I'm sorry. One regular main and one test. You can have sort of code and testing inside the same script. That's increasingly useful, we find. Okay, I've been using these images of food. And this presentation was generated for you by Perl 6, going from pod 6 source code to SVG to PDF. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Mark. Our next speaker is Jurt. It's kind of an anniversary, as I understand, as it's about Perl 4, which is it's kind of old, but still interesting in comparison to Perl 5. So, there's Jurt.